All right, we're joined in studio this morning by Michelle Brown, who is founder of Brown & Co. Mediation, of course, in Naas, and she has released her first book, Scars of Divorce. Michelle, welcome back. You were with us last year, the year before, so welcome back into studio.
Thanks very much.
This book is described as being part memoir and a part how-to guide. Take us through, you know, why there's kind of a double-edged sword here on this.
Yeah, well, the part memoir is, I suppose, to kind of put a human feel as to what the experience through what I describe as a torturous system of divorce in Ireland. And to try and kind of put someone in the picture of somebody, you know, who's going through it. It wasn't easy, and I suppose that part of it where our relationships break down and how all of the things we have to deal with behind closed doors, and you know, we're very Irish in that we're grand, but behind closed doors we're not. And it's not spoken about widely, so I decided to tell my story because I really, really want to impact change. And I suppose in my experience of what has almost been two decades of dealing with the family court system in Ireland, for me, I can see clearly that we're dealing with it wrong, that there is a huge need to change a system. And it's not the housing crisis, it's not the health crisis, it's something that I can clearly see what can be done to improve a situation. It's you know, obviously, I speak a lot in the book. The how-to part is about, you know, mediation, how mediation has affected, you know, change in how we can divorce. But also, there's a lot the government can do to support us through these difficult times. Divorcees can be quite vulnerable. You know, you're dealing with the trauma, and it requires more support to help people get through these difficult times. And currently, there's not enough awareness as to how we can do it better. And we need much more support.
And through your own story, you shed a light on the challenging legal system. And I use the word challenging, you know, there could be other words that you could use for it. But what did you find the hardest, or what parts of it kind of stick out as saying that needs to change?
Yeah. The immediate thing that tends to happen, or has had happened primarily, is that we form cases against each other. So you've two individuals whose relationship has broken down and communication is, by and large, difficult. But when you take cases against each other, which is when you go to a solicitor and that solicitor takes you on, there's a requirement by that, using that instrument, to build a case against the other party. For me, that's fundamentally wrong. That is what's the difficulty. So you're not in control of what's going on, and somebody is building a case against your spouse, the person whom you typically have to deal with for years to come as a co-parent, or, you know, and it's taken out of your control. So for me, it's about creating awareness as to what that system is doing and what the alternative system is that is currently available to people going through divorce.
It's one of those things that you don't really understand it or grasp it until you're going through it, because for a lot of people, you'll only go through a divorce once, max maybe twice, that you go through a divorce.
You'd hope.
Fingers crossed. But you don't know what lies ahead until you're actually in that situation. And maybe you don't know what other avenues or other ways of sorting this out there actually are, which mediation comes into play then.
Yeah, absolutely. You don't know what's ahead of you. We're doing what has always been done in Ireland, what has always been done. And the government, I feel, should address it from a different angle. How can we reduce these cases? For example, people don't understand. I spoke recently about the need for prenuptial agreements. If prenuptial agreements were in place, there would not be a need for a case. So people would have an agreement in advance as to what to do with regard to the division of assets. If there were further guidelines in place as to what correct provision actually looks like. So currently our law states correct provision must be provided, and it's as vague as you could possibly imagine. Like, what is that? How is that interpreted?
And so, is it just about changing the mindset? I mean, I'm thinking if, like, I'm getting married in August. If I went to Amy now in August and told her we need to sit down and talk about prenuptials, you know, there might be that, well, hang on a second, what are you saying? Are you saying this isn't going to work out? But if we shift the mindset and just go, look, I love you, but in the case that this happens, at least then we're not going to have to go through all this nightmare.
It's about a societal change, yeah. It's not just about isolating yourself and Amy, and obviously it's about how we're doing things. So if it became a way of how we deal with things, we move away from the traditional route to divorce. We have prenuptials. We have greater guidelines. And yes, we use mediation as a rule of thumb. We decide not to take up weapons, not to go into battle with each other, that we decide to try a conciliatory approach to dealing with how best to divide afterwards. So it's about a sea change in how we're doing things. It's not about, you know, isolating particular couples such as you. It's about society changing and how we decide to do things. And really key is the government getting behind it. The government saying, okay, we need to look at this differently. We need to help improve guidelines. We need to put legislation in place. We need to take a look at how we can reduce the number of cases going to the court. And we need to support private mediation so that it can grow and become, you know,
what
a go-to for couples separating.
What is mediation? And what's the key differences between mediation and divorce, for example?
Okay, so your traditional route, you pick a solicitor, your partner picks a solicitor across the road, they build cases against each other. Your mediator works as a professional for the two parties. Their professional capacity is to be on neither party's side and to help that couple to create an agreement which they use for the consent divorce. So you can leave your mediator with an agreement that's legally binding, and you have no need to go to court whatsoever. We have to go to court for two things when it comes to divorce: pension division and actual divorces. Everything else can be determined outside of a courtroom. And, you know, that's something that's not very widely understood, and it's something that's really, really important to me, and which is part of the reason why I wrote the book, because people don't really understand it. As you say, it's not something that we want to do very often. It's something, you know, we didn't put through in the referendum in the 80s because people were afraid, if we get divorced, I'll have to get divorced. It's about helping the vulnerable families who are going through really difficult breakups and putting something in place and creating awareness for them as to what that looks like.
Do you think there was a lack of understanding out in the public domain? Because since you've brought this book out, there's been a huge reaction to it, because not only people who are going through marital breakdown, but maybe their families or people who just want to educate themselves on what options are available are deciding to take up this book.
Definitely. I think we have kind of been saying for years, oh, it's so difficult, it's so hard, it's so expensive, and accepting that it's something that's just so awful. Whereby actually the fact is, there is an easier way of doing this. There is a better way of doing this. You know, we don't need to continue with this torturous system. So absolutely, yeah, it seems to have, you know, hit a nerve, and it seems to be something that people want to know more about.
Did you ever think you would write a book? Was it something that you had ambitions of doing, or did it just, like, what prompted you to do it?
Yeah, look, I did for many years have a secret desire to write a book. I was contacted a year ago and asked by a publisher to write the book. So I went off and did it. And it wasn't as difficult as I thought. But I'm really, really passionate about wanting to create change and create awareness. So I suppose that's where the drive has come from.
I don't want to use the word popular for mediation, but you'll see the point I'm making. Has it become more of an option for people now, or more people that are going through marital breakdown opting for mediation?
Absolutely. Awareness has improved, and there are more and more people. Like, you know, really, when it comes down to it, we're quite sensible. When we know more about something and we look into it, that makes sense. You know, what has been going on just simply doesn't make sense. We know ultimately we are going to have to get on with our spouses to some degree. We know a court case is going to cause untold damage. When we can understand a better way of doing things, we're going to go down that road.
Mm. Do you think as well that it doesn't always work for everybody? And, you know, it's like anything, I suppose, mediation and divorce. You have to have kind of that mutual agreement going into it before you sit down with the mediator.
I think a lot of people think, gosh, I have to sit down, we have to be getting on. That's not the case. Mediation doesn't require two parties to sit down in the room together. Mediation can be done with parties on separate meetings. Okay, so that's number one. So I suppose it's about the more we understand about it. Mediation, negotiation, peacemakers are one of the most important professions in the world as far as I'm concerned. And, you know, the more we understand that there's a lot can be done with this, you know, that it's not just a matter of two people getting on and sitting down. It's okay if there's huge difficulties within it. We can work with that. But what would improve mediation for everybody is further supports from the government, further guidelines when it comes to divorce as to what maintenance, correct provision and family assets are. So that's what I would like to call on the government to look at it and help reduce the numbers of people attending court cases in Ireland for divorce.
Have you gotten any kind of feedback from the government since you've come out and started talking about this or written the book or?
Not as yet, I'm doing lots of writing this week, so I would hope to engage, and that's the hope.
Yeah. Any thoughts or possible aspirations for another book, a second book, or do you think this is kind of the how-to guide as you see it?
Well, look, somebody said this is a friend for people going through a divorce, and that was a really big compliment, to be honest with you. And this, you know, maybe somebody else said it was an essential guide. For me, what I see what's needed since I've done this is that people who have gone through the difficult relationship breakdown need some support. So that's my next kind of project, is to try and put something together to help support people through the difficult emotional side of marriage breakdown.
Yeah, it's definitely struck a chord anyway with the public, because the feedback that it's gotten has just been incredible. It's €18, published by Orpen Press in the last few days. We have 5 copies of the book to give away this morning, and if you want to be given a chance of winning those books, all you have to do is just text your name, where you're from, and the word book, along with your full address, because it will be posted out to you, so you can put your full address and your air code to 0833 97 97 97. So your name, address, and the word book to 0833 97 97 97. You're still mediating yourself on the main street in Naas is where you're based?
Yeah, I'm located beside the courthouse in Naas, and we've offices and meeting rooms there. So we're mediating.
Mediating there on the main street in Naas, and people can obviously get in touch with you if they want.
People can find us in Brown & Co. Mediation.
Brilliant stuff. Listen, well done on bringing out the book. Again, as I say, the public feedback from it has been incredible. It's been called, or it's called, Scars of Divorce, and it's out now. 5 copies of the book to give away on the programme this morning. You can send those messages in to us. For the moment, we'll leave it there. Michelle Brown, founder of Brown & Co. Mediation, thanks for coming in to us this morning.
Thanks so much.
Kildare Today with Owen Beattie.
With Whitewater Shopping Centre Newbridge, Ireland's largest regional shopping centre. Fashion, food, film, all under one roof in the heart of Newbridge. WhitewaterSC.ie.
All right, good stuff. Thanks to Michelle Brown for coming in to us in studio this morning. And again, a reminder that we have 5 copies of her book, Scars of Divorce, to give away. It's part memoir, part how-to guide, focused on navigating the tricky waters of separation and divorce within the Irish legal system. You just have to text the word book, followed by your name and where you're from, your full address as well, because these will be posted out to you to 08339. 0818 97 97 97, and we'll announce the five winners just before the end of the programme. Now, more than 80% of secondary school principals believe there are not enough supports and information in place for effective delivery of the school book scheme this year, according to a new survey from the National Association of Principals and Deputies. Only 36% said they were confident in their school's ability to deliver the scheme effectively by the beginning of the new school year. Well, Paul Crone is on the line, director at the National Association of Principals and Deputies. Paul, welcome back to the programme. What's going on here, and how are principals feeling in the lead up to the new school year? Because even though this school year hasn't finished, you have to look ahead to the next one.
Well, I suppose, first of all, we're very welcoming of this scheme because it brings us in line with our education partners throughout Europe and delivering free education for parents and families. And it's a really important initiative. And planning for next year is at a well advanced stage. If you look, schools are recruiting teachers, they're planning timetables and all of that. And what has emerged really in relation to the school books scheme is the sums of money involved are above the 50,000 threshold under European law, which pushes it into an e-tenders process, which is a European-wide tendering process, which is quite a time-consuming and technical process. And there's no getting away from that because it's enshrined in EU law. So most school principals will be used to procuring items for the school by getting three quotes, comparing the quotes and getting the best value for the school. But where the sum of money goes over 50,000, they need to register on the e-tenders portal. They need to design a quasi-legal document, a tender document, to seek expressions of interest, bearing in mind that it's going European-wide. Then there is a waiting process to allow for applications to come in. Then a marking scheme has to be devised and the tenders have to be assessed. The tender awarded, then there's downtime to allow for appeals and queries and all of that. And then you have to enter into a contract with the supplier that allows, that takes into account all of the aspects. Now, when we look at the time frame, we're realistically potentially talking about being ready to order the books for September in the middle of August. Now, that doesn't allow for lead-in time, delivery time, etc.
Is this not all very overcomplicated? I mean, at the end of the day, and I don't want to be flippant, but they're school books.
And you know what? That is one view. However, it's public money, and the public procurement process cannot be circumvented. And it's unfortunate that that is the case. Schools are being more and more treated as public bodies, and are subject to the compliance and governance requirements of a public body. I suppose our issue is that schools don't have the capacity nor the technical expertise to deliver this, because principals have to learn this, and it can't be circumvented, is the advice that schools are getting and that we have gotten. So it's a hugely complex process, and we're calling on the department to put it in place, the necessary technical expertise and the capacity in the schools to deliver this.
And because that,
questions about whether it'll be September.
Because that process is so complicated, exactly, it's hard to put a time frame on it. But you are giving the department plenty of notice here. We're in March, so there's a good few months here for them to get the rack together. Do you feel as though they will? Have they given you any kind of indication that they will?
I have to be fair to the department. They're breaking their backs to try and put in place the necessary support and information. They're working within the requirements of the Department of Public Expenditure and Reform, who are holding the purse strings on this. The Department of Education are working really hard to try and get this done. But any solution that's in place for this year is really only a sticking plaster solution to get us over the hump for this year. And we would be calling for adequate measures in the budget this year to put in place permanent capacity and expertise, because we are looking at in the future at the expansion of the school meals programme, which is going to come into the same situation. School buildings are a huge issue. The schools need to be resourced to be treated as a public body, to be able to, I suppose, meet their audit and compliance requirements with public money.
What happens if this isn't being able to be rolled out by September, Paul?
Well, I know from speaking to principals in our survey, we had an open section where we asked principals to comment. And the overriding part of it was, we will do everything in our power. Principals will break their backs, they'll cut their holidays short, they'll work late into the evening to try and get this done. The reality is, it'll be done when it's done, if you know what I mean, because you're caught with statutory times. But it's going to lead to a very topsy-turvy start to the academic year in many, many schools. And the books will arrive at some stage whenever they're procured properly.
I know the NAPD yourselves calling on Education Minister Norma Foley to appoint an admin officer with specialist expertise to assist schools and ease the admin burden. Is there a feeling out there amongst principals that they were kind of just landed with this and they were kind of left to their own devices then?
Well, this is kind of nearly the straw that broke the camel's back in many ways. This has been creeping up over many, many years. We put a proposal in to the department in May 2022 for a school administrative officer that would deal with things like procurement, finance, health and safety, plant management, human resource, ICT infrastructure, all of the non-teaching elements or the business elements in many ways of the school. So because we had noticed the creep up in the audit, compliance, governance, all of those issues have been kind of on the rise over the last while. And this one probably would have been manageable if it were in the three quotes territory, but the fact that it's pushed it into e-tenders has raised the anxiety levels and the stress levels among principals in particular beyond breaking point at this point. And the reason we did the survey is, as we were going around the country, we were hearing it from principals who were saying, we're at breaking point.
All right, we'll have to wait and see what happens. The free school book scheme may not be ready by September, according to some principals around the country. That's Paul Crone, Director at the National Association of Principals and Deputy Principals. Thanks, Paul, for taking the time out to speak to us this morning. Let's go back to the Kildare Newbridge Municipal District meeting then of a couple of days ago, and on the line is Fianna Fáil Councillor Noel Heavey. Noel, welcome back to the programme. Cycling and cycle lanes, obviously something that was high up on your agenda at this meeting, because you wanted the council to outline the schedule for when the cycle ways around and from the Lidl roundabout on the Naas Newbridge Road will be completed. What response did you get there?
We as councillors have been made aware that the policy is to reduce car journeys. Part of that was the imposition of cycleway on the main street in Newbridge, which enraged and made people epileptic because people didn't understand it. It was promised that there would be information dissemination and where people could be informed of, you know, the reasons behind this. And the policy is to reduce car journeys by 13% and to replace it with sustainable transport. So I just wanted to investigate what were the plans to replace, you know, our very wide street, the sustainability plans with cycleways and sustainable transport. So I had a specific inquiry from a person who cycles to work every day as to why, when we're going to finish this little small piece at the Buckley's roundabout. There is a cycleway actually from Newbridge out to Lady Tom Business Park, but there's a piece of it unfinished at the roundabout. So I was asking about that. The information that I was given was that at the time, Kildare County Council didn't own the road and didn't own the piece, and that they couldn't do it, and the contract was being awarded, and it still remains unfinished, which was a little bit unsatisfactory.
Yeah, because similarly, Noel, you wanted the council to give you an update on the plans to link Newbridge to Naas via cycleway, which would be all along that road that you've mentioned. Did they give you another update on that?
No, again, stonewalled me there, pointed out to me that there was no money available had been allocated by NTA. And like I was bemused by the whole thing, I expect Kildare County Council, you know, the sustainable transport, to be pressing. Like, I'm pressing for information and I'm pressing for development of infrastructure before the imposition of, you know, as what people see as restrictive situation of more cycleways. it's very, very important that cycleways are coming from somewhere, going to somewhere, rather than just putting them as we have at the minute. And I understand why they were put there, so that people could understand what cycleways are. That was 4 years ago. But there doesn't seem to be any investment planned for sustainable transport in the event of space being cut down on motorists.
Okay, because similarly as well, Noel, we talk about sustainable transport here. You wanted to find out whether or not a bus shuttle service to link Newbridge housing estates to the train station could be implemented. Will that be implemented?
Again, I inquired and was sort of stonewalled. I wasn't happy. Like, you know, there's similarly, I asked at another point, Safeway to schools for children, and I think another councillor asked the same question. We all know that the era of the car is being marginalised more and more.
Right, so no sign of a shuttle bus then linking the housing estates to the train station.
No sign, I think. Now, it was pointed out to me that it's the responsibility of Local Link, but sure, Kildare County Council has to be in a position to influence what's going on there. Everyone needs to be playing on the team sheet. You know, if Kildare County Council, sustainable transport, are only recipients of what the NTA hand out, and yet they go ahead and they impose the restrictions without adequate replacement of how people are to get from one place to another, that's very unsatisfactory.
On that note, we'll leave it there. Fianna Fáil councillor on the Kildare Newbridge Municipal District, Noel Heavey. Thanks, Noel.
Kildare Today with Owen Beattie.
With Whitewater Shopping Centre Newbridge, Ireland's largest regional shopping centre. Fashion, food, film, all under one roof in the heart of Newbridge. WhitewaterSC.ie.
Now, welcome back. Final chance to enter into our competition this morning. We're giving away 5 copies of Michelle Brown's book. She's a family mediator from NAIS. The name of the book is Scars of Divorce, part memoir, part how-to guide focused on navigating the tricky waters of separation and divorce within the Irish legal system. We'll be announcing the winners in about 10 minutes' time. So you just have to text the word book followed by your name and your full address to 0833 97 97 97 because the books are going to be posted out to you. I want to move on though to something different, and a report published by Barrettstown to mark its 30th year in Ireland reveals that its therapeutic programmes for children affected by cancer and other serious illnesses since 1994 equates to some 1.9 billion euro in social value. Well, Dia Hearn is with me, CEO of Barrettstown. Dee, welcome back to the programme. Before we talk about this report, hard to believe that Barrettstown is celebrating 30 years this year.
It is incredible to believe that the great actor and philanthropist Paul Newman came to Ireland back in the early 90s to set up a camp for children with cancer and other serious illnesses in County Kildare. And, you know, back then, Paul had a dream that sick children, you know, should be able to go to camp. They should be able to have lots of fun, but you know, that they would have all of their medical needs taken care of, just like any other child. But I guess what Paul couldn't have envisaged way back then was that Barrettstown's therapeutic programmes are now considered a vital component of the Irish healthcare system. Basically, we do what the hospitals often can't. We provide the psychosocial support for sick children and their families through our residential and our outreach programmes. So as we were approaching our 30th anniversary, we wanted to look back and to understand the real impact and the social value of Barrettstown over that period. So we commissioned an independent study to do that for us, and we were blown away by the findings. The overall social value of Barrettstown, as you say, Owen, is 1.9 billion euro. And it shows that for every 1 euro that was invested by Barrettstown, it returned 13 euro in social value for the campers that we serve.
It's incredible. It also reveals that the organisation invested over 145 million euro to serve over 120,000 campers to date. And it includes over 33,000 volunteers donating more than 1.2 million hours. My eyes were really opened to the work that goes on in Barrettstown last year. Dee, I went out to the open day that you had just at the end of the summer, and I was blown away by the sheer happiness and joy that is in behind those front gates.
That is a magnificent place, Owen, and thanks for saying that. I mean, you know, it is a very happy place. I mean, yes, we're providing therapeutic programs for children who have a serious illness, but it is a very happy place. I mean, children are plunged into a world of hospitals and doctors and grueling treatment when they're ill, but our programs are designed to, you know, give them back the childhood that they've lost out on as a result of that treatment. Our therapeutic programs are designed to rebuild confidence, independence and self-esteem. So anytime you're here in Barrettstown, when our campers are here, it is a happy place. You know, we don't focus on the sickness or, you know, the medication or anything like that. It's all about, you know, making sure that those children, you know, realise that they're just like any other child, that they're not defined by their illness.
All those programmes that are provided by Barrettstown to children and their families, completely free of charge, and they are underpinned by donations. 98% underpinned by donations and just 2% government funding, which is incredible. But also, it's just kind of a tip of the cap to the generosity of people around the country down through the years who give money to such a great cause.
It certainly is. I mean, this year, Owen, we're going to serve 22,000 campers, and it's going to cost us €9 million to do that. And as you say, we receive just under 2% of our funding from the government. So we're hugely grateful to all of our donors all over Ireland, whether it's our corporate partners or whether it's individuals who give money to Barrettstown on a monthly basis or communities around the country who run events for us. We're very, very grateful, because we would not be able to deliver those programmes to 22,000 campers this year without that support.
What kind of programmes do you deliver? I know that Minister Stephen Donnelly acknowledged the unique and important role that Barrettstown plays in the lives of seriously ill children throughout the country, but what kind of programmes are you talking about there when you say therapeutic programmes?
Well, actually, we were delighted to meet with Minister Donnelly yesterday when he launched the report for us. And just to remind your listeners that the Irish government were very, very supportive of Barrettstown back in those early years in the 90s when Paul Newman came over. Paul was looking for a centre of excellence in Europe for a camp, and he received a warm welcome from the Irish government. And the Irish government gifted the Barrettstown estate to Paul on a 90-year peppercorn lease. Without that support, Barrettstown wouldn't be here today. In terms of the programmes that we deliver here, we call it serious fun, but there's a serious side to serious fun here, and that is that every single programme it's intentional, and it's all designed to rebuild a child's confidence, independence or self-esteem. So if you take it that we've got an incredible climbing wall here in Barrettstown, and one of the activities is climbing the climbing wall and getting to the top of that climbing wall, and we'll have children who will scale the top of the climbing wall in minutes, and we'll have other children who are absolutely terrified, and our counsellors will all work with the children to make sure that they succeed and that they're successful. So, you know, they might take their first step or they might get halfway up the climbing wall, but the key thing is that evening when they're having what we call cottage chat, they remind the children, well, look, you know, you were terrified to climb that climbing wall and you made it to the top, or you made it halfway up. So it's that positive reaffirmation that, you know, those children can succeed, that their illness hasn't stopped them doing something.
Do you have any fundraisers lined up this year then, or what's the rest of 2024 looking like for Barrettstown?
It's a busy, busy year, yes. We've got the Dublin Mountain Challenge is one of our most popular events. That's coming up in June. And we also have a golf event, which we're just finalising the details of now. So if any of your listeners are keen golfers, they can log on to the Barrettstown website. We've also got our anniversary gala ball taking place in the RDS on the 14th of September. So again, we're hoping to have 1,000 people in the RDS for that event. And there's many, many more events. If anybody listening would like to find out about Barrettstown's events, they can log on to our website at barrettstown.org.
Well, listen, I'm sure we'll talk to you throughout the year when those events are coming up, but keep up that fantastic work. And if anybody, of course, wants to donate to Barrettstown, go on to the website that Dee mentioned there as well. Dee Ahern, CEO of Barrettstown, great talking to you again, and a big shout out to all the volunteers, the workers, the families and the children out at Barrettstown, and good morning. Yeah, an incredible report just being published yesterday, marking Barrettstown's 30th year in Ireland, revealing that its therapeutic programmes for children affected by cancer and other serious illnesses equates to €1.9 billion in social value. 98% of their funding comes from donations, 2% government funding, and again, hard to believe that it's 30 years since Barrettstown was set up just outside Ballymore Eustace back in 1994. I want to announce the five winners, if I can count, of our competition this morning. We were giving away five copies of Michelle Brown's book, Scars of Divorce, and the five winners, Joanna Enright in Kildare Town, Emily Ryan in Crookstown, Bridget Kelly in Castledermot, Caroline Moran in Robertstown, and Martina O'Connor in Portlaoise. Well done to you all, and those books are going to be posted out to you by the publisher, and we'll be in touch with you separately later on this morning.